Darkness. We're uncomfortable in the dark. We're hidden in the dark. For those of us with sight, we're unsure of our steps in the dark. We're lost in the dark. We're afraid in the dark. It was into the darkness of nothing that God breathed, "Let there be light." And into the darkness of a lost world, Jesus said, "I am the light." In this series that we're in, we're exploring the I am statements of Jesus, what he says about himself. He's using the simple, ordinary language of people to give his followers a fuller understanding of who he is. And so in week one, we learned that Jesus is the bread of life. And in week two, that he is the door. And last week, we learned that he is the good shepherd. My name is Sarah Burt, and today I want us to look at this statement of Jesus. I am the light of the world. If you've got your booklet with you today, you can take notes on page 22, or you can use your phone and find the Grace app. In order for us to really understand the importance and the brilliance and the wonder of light, we have to have an understanding of darkness. There is one group of people who don't need this explained, right? Children. Kids know the power of light. Kids don't like darkness at all. They want a light, even a little one. My 2-year-old son Lincoln has a lantern that shines stars all over the ceiling at night when he sleeps. But none of us really like the darkness. That's why we have windows and skylights in our houses and sunroofs and moonroofs in our cars. That's why we have candles and flashlights in that drawer beside the bed. And that's why we complain every fall when the sun starts setting earlier and earlier. And why we have what we call daylight savings time, right? We're trying to stay in the light as much as possible. But can you imagine with me the ancient world? No street lamps, no flashlights, no neon signs, only the moon and stars, and those only on clear nights. You've probably had moments of darkness, but I think that we would be really terrified of nights like that. One year when I was in high school, my family took our snowmobiles and we drove to northern Quebec for vacation. Yes, we're some of those crazy people. We love snow, and this winter was kind of sad for us. But anyway, one night while we were riding, we stopped on the trail in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by the woods, and we turned off our sleds. Darkness. But looking up at the sky, you could see what seemed like all the stars in the universe. We even saw the Hale-Bopp comet. The lights in the sky were just so much more brilliant, so much more vivid in the total darkness. Until recent history, the only way to make light in the darkness was to burn something. Fire was how you cooked your food, lit up the night, and very importantly, defended yourselves from potential harm. Like those shepherds Derek taught us about last week, they used fires at night as a way to keep predators away from their sheep. One of my favorite things to do is to go camping or hiking in the woods. Last fall, some friends of ours went with us, and we stayed in the woods at a cabin graciously given to us for the weekend by Skip and Donna Papa. As we sat around our tiny campfire surrounded by the darkness, we began to hear some noises from the woods. Leaves were crunching, twigs were snapping, fallen branches were breaking. And who walks out but a big black bear? He walked around and laid down just about 30 yards away from us. And he literally hung out there for about an hour, even though my husband kept shining a flashlight in his eyes every few minutes. I think we were too stunned to be scared, almost. We definitely kept that fire between us and him, just in case. This morning, there are two background ideas that I want to address. First, the use of fire or light in the Bible. Stop and consider. Over all the years the Bible was written, there was only this fire to illuminate the darkness. The Old Testament speaks often of fire and light. The first act of creation was God speaking light into existence. God spoke to Moses through a burning bush in the wilderness, and God led the Israelites out of Egypt by a pillar of fire at night. God's instructions for the temple included making lampstands of pure gold, and many of the rituals and celebrations in the temple involved light and fire, including the sacrifices. One day, God made the sun stand still so that the Israelites could triumph over their enemies. With fire, God consumed Elijah's soaking wet altar on Mount Carmel. God stood with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fire. The prophets spoke of God coming like fire. Isaiah told the people of Israel that one day they would no longer need the sun or the moon, for the Lord would be their everlasting light. And then one night, the angels of the heavens lit up the dark night for some shepherds, and some wise men began following an unusually bright star, and that everlasting light entered the world, Jesus. Let's turn to the New Testament scriptures this morning. For context, we're going to start in John 7. In this chapter, we learn that Jesus quietly arrives in Jerusalem to attend the Feast of Tabernacles. I say quietly because in the first verses of the chapter, Jesus lets his brothers know that he won't be going to Jerusalem with them because he knows there are people waiting there to take his life and the right time has not yet come. So instead of publicly going to the city with his brothers and his disciples, Jesus arrives in secret. Verse 14 tells us that halfway through the feast, Jesus comes to the temple and begins to teach. Now, before we go any further, let's look at the second background idea, this Feast of the Tabernacles. In Leviticus 23, God outlines his requirements for several feasts the Israelites are to celebrate annually, and the Feast of the Tabernacles is one of them. This was a fall harvest holiday. It lasted for 1 week and was marked by God's command that the Israelites live in booths or tabernacles for 7 days as a way to remember that their ancestors had to live in booths when they were being brought out of Egypt and wandering in the wilderness. This was the greatest of feasts for the Jews, characterized by many sacrifices and by much joy. Every evening during this feast, the great lampstands in the outer court of the temple were lit up in remembrance of the Exodus. When God led the people by cloud and by fire, when his presence, protection, and guidance were ever before them. The priests would perform torch dances around these lampstands, and the Levites would sing and play music through the night. It was said that the light from the temple was seen throughout the city of Jerusalem and that all the people joined in the rejoicing. How neat it would have been to be there and see that. In our text today, in John 8, Jesus has come to the temple and is teaching at the end of the feast. Verse 20 tells us that Jesus is standing right in the treasury of the temple where those four colossal lampstands stood. Now, many scholars believe that the lamps were not lit at this time that Jesus was teaching. So it's out of this darkness that Jesus makes a radical statement to the people of Israel. They have waited so long for deliverance, and he says these words that hold the power of life. In John 8, verse 12, he says, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." Today, I want us to consider the power of these words. I want us to be in awe of the one who said these words, and I want us to walk out of here changed by these words. So let's unpack this verse phrase by phrase and discover three truths about the light. In the first phrase, Jesus says, "I am the light of the world." And our first truth about the light is simple. We need to know that Jesus is the light. Now, when Jesus says he's the light of the world, everyone who hears them on this day, they know exactly what he's saying. His words are radical. If true, his words will change everything. Jesus is claiming divinity, that he is not just a man, but that he is also God. Throughout the Old Testament, the Messiah is described as being the light. In Isaiah 9, a familiar text to us at Christmas time, the coming Messiah is called a great light. Malachi calls him the Sun, S-U-N, of righteousness. And the Old Testament specifically refers to the Messiah as a light not only for the Jews, but for the Gentiles too. Simeon, remember that old guy? When baby Jesus is presented at the temple, Simeon recognizes that baby Jesus is the Messiah, and he quotes the prophets, saying that Jesus is a light of revelation to the Gentiles. That's us, guys. Now, on this day, these words infuriated the Pharisees. They knew exactly what Jesus was claiming, so they immediately challenge him. Now, they don't directly attack his claim to be the light. Instead, they take a different approach, saying that Jesus' claim is not valid because he is his own witness. According to the Jewish law, someone's testimony required two or three witnesses. So through the next several verses, John 8, 13 through 30, Jesus says seven times that he is from the Father. Again, he's claiming his divinity. He's basically telling these Pharisees, what better witness than God himself? Jesus refutes the Pharisees' challenge, telling them that he comes from the Father. He speaks for the Father. He is going to the Father, and he is one with the Father. It is true. He is the light of the world. And if they would just follow him, they would never walk in the darkness of an unlit temple again, but they would have the light of life. Now, these lampstands that Jesus was standing next to were the lights for the whole temple and for the city of Jerusalem. But if what Jesus is saying is true, then those lamps and all other forms of light are but a dimly lit shadow of his light, the light of the world. No lamp, no burning bush, no pillar of fire, no bonfire, not even the sun in the sky can light up the whole world at once. Jesus is saying in no uncertain terms that he is the Son of God, the Messiah, and he has come to light up the world. So did those in the crowd follow him that day? No. In fact, some of them picked up stones to kill him. But I love this next part. In the next chapter in John 9, we see Jesus come across a man who was born blind. Now, Jesus has just stood in the temple and declared himself to be the light of the world. So I don't believe for one second that Jesus just happened to stumble across this man. Jesus turns to his disciples again and he says, "I am the light of the world." And then he spits on the ground, rubs the mud in the blind man's eyes, and tells him to go wash. The man obeys, and his eyes are opened. He can see. Now, of course, the Pharisees find out. They question this man, and his testimony is simple. In John 9:25, the man who was born blind said to the Pharisees, "One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see." And now do the Pharisees believe that Jesus is who he claims to be? No. I mean, Jesus claims to be the light, the Messiah they've been waiting for. And then he heals a blind man to demonstrate it is he who gives sight. It is he who is the true light. There are some of you here today who still aren't sure that Jesus is the light. Maybe like the Pharisees, you've seen example after example of how Jesus has brought light, how he's changed the life of that friend, or maybe made a difference in the life of a family member. Or maybe even experienced his presence today during worship. He is here in this place and he is saying to you, "I am the light of the world. Come, follow me, and you will truly see. You will never have to go back to the darkness." This is not the first time we see John referring to Jesus as light. In fact, light is a word that John uses often. In John 1, he writes, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." Without Jesus, the world is in darkness, both physically and spiritually. In the beginning, there was only darkness. Then Jesus, the Word, created light and life. He created the very men who wanted to stone him. He created them, and then he came to earth, the Word made flesh, so that the true light would be right here among the creation he loved. And John goes on, "The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through him. Yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God." Oh, how the Pharisees must have grieved Jesus, that his very own people did not recognize the Savior they needed, and they had waited so long for him. Jesus was, and he is, the light of the world. Please do not miss this. Do not walk away from here today without wrestling with the importance of who Jesus says that he is. He made you, he loves you, and he wants you for his own, a child of God. If we'll admit it, we know we need the light, and we crave it. That's why so many people climb into tanning beds or escape to Florida in the wintertime. But when Jesus says he is the light, that means any other light is not true light. Every other light we know, like that person with the magnetic personality we're so drawn to, or that new house you've been dreaming of, or that next high you're trying to get, all those lights are like a candle. They will dim, they will fade away, and they will eventually go out. If we're looking for anyone or anything else to be that light for our world, it is false. And all it does is distract us from Jesus. Like city lights steal our view of the stars. Not even the lamps of the temple where God's presence had dwelt for hundreds of years were the true light. Only Jesus is the light. Let's look at the second part of this verse, where we'll find the second truth you need to know about the light. "Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." The second thing we learn is that we need the light. Just as we need his daily bread, and we need his protection as our door, and we need him to lead us as the good shepherd, we need him to be the true light in our lives. I want to share a couple of reasons that we need the light. First, we need Jesus' light in order to see ourselves accurately. How many of us know someone who views him or herself one way, but we can all see who they really are, right? Like Michael Scott from The Office. Oh my gosh, that man makes me cringe. It's my worst fear. But truly, that's who we are when we're in the darkness. We need the truth, and to do that, we need the light of Jesus to expose our sin. Have you ever seen how ugly the stuff is that grows in the dark? Check out this blobfish that lives deep, deep in the ocean. That is such a sad, ugly fish. Darkness is not a place where life thrives. Just as plants and animals and our human bodies need the life-giving rays of the sun God has created, so we also need the abundant, life-giving light of the sun whom God sent to us. But there's this funny thing about how life deals with darkness. It adjusts. This nasty fish from the Twilight Zone developed its own version of light. When we hang out in darkness for a while, we adjust our sight to grow accustomed to the lack of light. In fact, we'll start seeing other things in the darkness and think that they are light, like Marlin and Dory with the anglerfish. The Bible says in 2 Corinthians 11:14 that Satan disguises himself as an angel of light, but he is a false, deceptive life. He is really the prince of darkness. But guys, when we're surrounded by darkness, his light doesn't look so bad. There's this story my parents tell about when they first met. They were young, like middle school age, and there was a fun house at the local fair. My mom went in with her friend Betsy, and my dad went in with his girlfriend. And somewhere in the dark of the fun house, my dad lost his girl and grabbed my mom's hand instead. She was petrified of who was dragging her through the dark, and my dad was completely ignorant of his mistake. Her hand felt like his girlfriend's hand. When you're in the dark, one truth is as good as another, right? Till they came to the daylight. Oops, not exactly love at first sight. And I'm not sure my mom ever went in a funhouse again. Now, this isn't a perfect illustration. The point's not that my mom's bad or that we need to avoid funhouses. My point is that when we're walking in darkness, our awareness and perception of truth is distorted. What might seem right is actually wrong. And we'll grab onto anything that seems to give us hope and purpose, even if it's the wrong thing. And it will ultimately lead us further from Christ. And sometimes, we're just so deep in the darkness, we don't even know we need the light. Throughout the Word of God, light is used to represent truth. So to walk in the light is to have the truth we need to keep us from sin. And when we let Jesus shine his light into the darkness, we recognize our greatest need for light. In the darkest night of your soul, the power and promise of light is realized. Your darkness is not so dark that he cannot overcome it. If we look at the passage just before this in John 7, we see Jesus saving an adulterous woman from stoning. He saw all the ugliness of her sin, and he forgave her, saying, "I do not condemn you. Go and leave your life of sin." Guys, when Jesus died on the cross, he descended into the darkest place of all, into hell. And he overcame that darkness and rose from the grave triumphant. A song that I love says that he is like sunlight burning at midnight. Do not think that he cannot raise your life up from the pit. He can. He is the only one who can. And his words are for you. I am the light of the world. We all have dark places that we keep hidden. Maybe they are secret sins that we either don't think are that big a deal, or we just enjoy them too much to get rid of them. But there are ugly places of our hearts that Jesus really, really wants to shine into. He wants to bring those to light. He wants us to repent, and he wants us to follow him, not returning to that darkness ever. When I was 9 years old and my brother Scott was 6, my parents had a new baby, my little sister Anna. She is a beautiful daughter of the King, gifted with a beautiful voice and a heart of worship. But when she was little, she just drove me nuts. I'm introverted. I like to be alone. I like to read books. I like to go to bed early, and I do not have a fear of missing out. I'm also selfish and impatient. Anna is an extrovert. She loves to be with people. She loves to love people. She loves to talk to people, and she doesn't want to miss any moments with people. When she was little, she wanted to be with me and talk to me. And I'm ashamed to say that I was not a good big sister. When I played CIA, you know, because I thought maybe I'd grow up and be a spy someday, I would lock her outside my little office and tell her she could be my secretary. So she would sit out there just yelling and yelling for me to answer the phone, ring, ring, and I ignored her. She got excited about everything I did and wanted me to be excited about everything she did. And I ignored her. She sent me homemade cards in college. She taped dimes and nickels and pennies in there so I would have some extra money. And I ignored her. One summer evening during college, my parents sat me down and we had a really hard conversation. They pointed out this ugly, dark area of my heart, and I knew Jesus was not pleased with me. I drove away that night with my heart hurting so badly, because it is painful to come out of darkness and into light. And unfortunately, it took me a couple of years before I really let Jesus shine his light in there long enough to radically change my heart toward my sister. I changed enough that I moved back to live near home for her high school years so I could be part of her life before she realized what a loser I was. Today, we're not just sisters, but friends. But guys, I shudder inside to think about what could have happened to our family if I had not let Jesus push back that darkness, if I had not chosen to follow him into the light. Maybe you're like me, and the light of Jesus has opened your eyes to see something ugly in the darkness of your heart. But rather than come into that light, you're still trying to hide. It hurts too much to expose that ugliness. Yeah, I know it hurts, and I know it requires humility, and there will definitely be a long road of healing ahead. But to hide is to step into another kind of darkness. It's called shame, and shame is one of the ugliest things. I've wrestled with a lot of it. Shame lies to you and tells you that you're not worthy. But listen to me. There is nothing hidden in you that that light cannot expose. And there is no darkness too dark for Jesus. And there is no place safer than in his arms. And there is no love greater than his heart for you. There is nothing in your life that the maker of heaven and earth, the risen Savior, the light of the world, cannot handle. So is there a place like that in your life? Is there something you've kept hidden? You've been afraid to deal with it. You've tried, but it just hurts too much. You need his light to see yourself accurately, to expose that sin so that you don't have to walk in that darkness anymore. We also need the light so that we can see his path more clearly. Just as in Exodus, the Israelites needed God to guide them out of Egypt through the wilderness, we need Jesus' light to guide us through the wilderness of this world. Psalm 119:105 says, "Your word is a lamp to my feet and a light to my path." And in John 1, we see that Jesus is the word. So Jesus is the word and the word is our lamp. We're not talking about some legalistic following of rules, but we're talking about a life-giving relationship following the true light. I don't want you to miss the power behind this. Jesus is the word. He is the word that breathed light into nothingness at the creation of the world. And we have that very word in us and right here before us. And that word is the light that guides us. So get into this book and we read the living and active words of God the Father and Jesus the Son that are found there. And he lights our path, perhaps not the whole path, but the next step. So when he says serve the poor, we do it. And when he says don't slander your neighbor, we don't. And when he says to lead and work with humility, we follow him. Not because we're blindly obeying rules, because he's illuminating for us the pathway to true joy and satisfaction in this life. It's one of the benefits of having him as our light. So we've learned so far that Jesus is the light, and we've learned that we need his light to see ourselves and to see the path before us. And knowing those things makes this third point so profound. Look with me at Jesus' words in Matthew 5:14-16. "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." Here's the incredible third truth about the light. We are the light of the world. When Jesus stood in the temple and said that whoever followed him would have the light of life, it meant that his divine light would not just be with us, but in us. This living light that the dark world needs so much is in you and in me. And look at Matthew 5 again. Light is meant to shine. Paul says in Ephesians 5:8 that we were once in darkness, but now we are to live as children of light. And in Philippians 2, Paul says that we are to shine like the stars in the universe as we hold out the word of life. This light in us has purpose. We have purpose to push back, to expose the darkness, to make known his word, and to reveal the Son and the Father. And as we do that, what happens to this light? It grows. It multiplies. It doesn't remain static. I wish we could turn out all the lights and see only the light of Christ in each of his followers. We'd see this army of light moving against the dark world with love and compassion, mercy and grace. And I see so many of you in this army. I see Scott Michael shining at Mercyhurst and in Girard and in Mexico and in the Dominican Republic. I see Bob Deppin shining on all of his patients and on his grandchildren. I see Kathy Schrieffer shining on volunteers and thousands of children receiving shoeboxes around the world. I see Miriam Crossman, who shines all over Erie and on everyone she meets and in my life. I see John Park shining at LECOM and everywhere he steps foot. I see Angela Carota shining on children in the Dominican Republic and on her friends in her school. I see Carrie Grandy shining all over Harbor Creek and in the Iroquois Elementary School. And I see Sarah Salmon, who shines in her home and on many, many women. And I see businessmen and women, salesmen and accountants, teachers, laborers, volunteers, insurance brokers, social workers, counselors, nurses, doctors, administrative assistants, students, interns, moms and dads, grandparents, all with the living light of Christ in them, willing to shine that light wherever God has called them, because they know that Jesus is light and that all of the world needs his light and that we are the light of the world. Our very presence is meant to point the world to Jesus. The word says in 2 Corinthians 4, 3 through 6, that Satan's false light has blinded the minds of unbelievers, so they cannot see the light of Christ. Who in your life cannot see Jesus? Who is living in the darkness, chasing the false lights of success or money, a perfect body, the most Facebook friends, whatever it is? God means for you to be the light of Christ to them. So where do you find yourself this morning? Is the light of Christ in you? And are you letting that light shine? Or are you standing in the darkness? Find someone who has the light. Ask them about Jesus. I want to end with this. Revelation 2, Jesus speaks to John about seven churches which are represented as seven golden lampstands. These churches are to be shining his light. But Jesus says that if they forget their purpose, he will remove their lampstand. To remove it is to remove the light. Oh, church, let us not be an unlit lampstand. We are the only light that there is in this world. And here in Erie County, each one of us is a lamp on this lampstand called Grace Church. Perhaps one of us alone cannot illuminate this whole city and region, but imagine the darkness that is pushed back when we all shine. So let's join with the Marcus Atkinsons and the Lisa Holmans, the Damon Petersons, the Kristen Hesches, the Lisa Pekanskis, who are letting the Jesus in them shine through. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. But guys, our light is not small. It's not the symbolic light of those temple lamps. This is the true light of Jesus Christ that pushed back darkness and overcame death, and it is in us and it is alive. This lampstand called Grace Church, it's not rooted in this building. No, unlike the lamps of the temple, our lamps have feet and hands and eyes and ears and hearts and the word of truth, because Jesus is the light. We are the light, so let's go shine.